بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، والصلاة والسلام على خاتم النبيين والمرسلين أبي القاسم محمد وآله الغر الميامين. الذين هم قادتنا وقدوتنا إلى يوم الدين. Brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum. I am going to talk about another great personality of our times, a shaheed, the martyr, a Sayyid Ayatollah Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr, whom I had the honor to meet him several times in Najaf and in Baghdad during the 1970s, while he was still alive and before his execution by Saddam's regime. There is no doubt that there is a great deal of affinity, similarity, and agreement between Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi alayh, the founder of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, and the martyr Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. And they certainly met and discussed and agreed on a great deal of things while Imam Khomeini was in Najaf. And of course, Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr lived and worked and practiced in Najaf as well. I am going to talk about three aspects of a Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr very briefly. The first one is the background. Secondly, the core thoughts, the thinking of Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. And thirdly, the aftermath, the what happened after his death. With regard to the background, let us remember that Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr was a relatively young member of the Shia religious establishment, what we call Al-Hawza. He was only born in the 1930s. And when you compare the age of Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr with the other great scholars at that time, you see that he was much younger than the other great scholars. So in the 1950s, before the revolution or the coup which took place in 1958, Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr was only in his 20s, sort of 24, 25, 26 years of age, nothing more than that. But he was extremely alert, extremely conscious of the surroundings. So he was not purely a religious scholar. He was watching intently and with a great interest what was happening in the political, economic, and social arenas around him. At that time in Iraq, in the 1950s, and I am talking about the period before the revolution of 1958, as well as after the revolution of 1958, there were two major political currents in Iraq. The first one was Marxist, socialist, leftist, and the Communist Party in Iraq was very strong and had a very large following. At the same time, there was another major current in Iraq, political, social, and economic, and that was the pan-Arab nationalism. The leader of Egypt at that time, Jamal Abdel Nasser, was very much respected and admired by large sections of people, particularly the youth and the more better educated, not only in Iraq, but also in many other Arab countries. So you have these two currents, major currents, political and social currents in Iraq at that time, the leftists on the one hand and the pan-Arab nationalism on the other. There was no real existence or power or influence of the Islamic current, the Islamic thinking. That does not mean, of course, that there were no Islamic thinkers. There were. But those Islamic thinkers, particularly the main scholars, the Ayatollahs at that time, you could say that they were really separated from the rest of society, from the vast majority of the population. There wasn't much dialogue between the Islamic scholars on the one hand and the masses and the better educated on the other hand. Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr understood that fact, and I am certain that he was saying to himself all the time, this is wrong. This has to be corrected. Islam has the philosophy, the thinking, the ideas, the concepts, which can be presented to the masses. These people are deluded, you know, the followers of Marxism, as well as the followers of pan-Arab nationalism. They are wrong. They are mistaken. They don't know the truth. So he took it upon himself to try to correct that situation. The great scholars, for whom I have a great deal of respect, for some reason, did not address this challenge. Maybe they did not know how. Not that they did not know Islam, but they spoke a language that perhaps most of the masses and the better educated did not understand. You know, their language was rather technical, specialized, immersed in Islamic law, jurisprudence, and they did not really have much contact with the vast majority of the masses. So Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr, you could say, brought a new thinking, a new blood, a new leadership. And he said, let us try to educate the masses. And he published his first book, Our Philosophy, Falsafatuna, in the middle of the 1950s, when he was barely around probably 24, 25, 26. He was very humble. Again, unlike the other scholars, he would do his shopping by himself. He thought he would follow the guidance and the example of Imam Ali, Amir al-Mu'mineen, and be humble and not to try to give any impression that he was above the rest or better than the rest. And as I say, he published his first book at that time. Everybody was surprised, and I was a young man at that time, in the 1950s, that such a person who seemed to be so humble, so simple, okay, he would walk in the markets and do his own shopping, you know, carry his own bag and do his own shopping, has such thinking, would be so deep, so knowledgeable. But that was the man. That was Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr, deep thinking, knowledgeable, humble, eager to listen to other people's views. And then after Our Philosophy, he published another major book, which is the biggest volume that he published, Iqtisaduna, Our Economy. And this is a man who did not study economics or philosophy or physics or chemistry at university. He taught himself. He got books and he read them and he tried to understand them. In addition to that, he took it upon himself to meet experts and scientists and educated people and to have a dialogue with them and to listen to them and to ask them questions about their knowledge and their ideas and their fields of expertise. So this is the background to Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr and his thinking, the environment in which he lived and the challenges that he felt that he had to face, that he felt that there was an urgent need for new thinking, new ideas, new blood in the Shia religious establishment. And he took it upon himself to correct the situation in the right direction. Now, if I can move to the second point, and that is the core thought. Basically, if we look at his writings, not just in philosophy, economics, logic, political movements, explanation of the Quran, of the verses of the Quran, he was really a well-rounded scholar who you might know that in the past, at the time of Ibn Sina and other major scientists of Islamic history, a person would not be called muallim or teacher unless and until he knew all fields of knowledge. Okay, and Ibn Sina says that he did not reach that stage or that title because he was not conversant with the music and dancing. So our Imam or Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr felt that he needed to know the major areas of knowledge of his time, and he needed to know how to direct the masses and the better educated in order to make them aware of the alternative, the Islamic alternative that was absent in the 1950s and the 1960s. So he published his first work, as I say, in the 1950s, and then his second major work in the late 1950s, early 1960s, Our Economics. And he also published other works in other fields: logic, banking, political organization, tafsir or explanation of the Quran. He touched upon, in his writings, he touched upon various critical ideas, concepts, which perplexed many people at that time and made a lot of people, perhaps the majority of Iraqis at least, and perhaps in other Arab and Muslim countries, made them, you know, these issues, these critical problems, made them move towards other political currents like Marxism, pan-Arab nationalism, and so on. So he tried to deal with these critical issues: the existence of God, the relationship between man or woman and God, the limits of freedom, the role of the state in society, the social security system, the ownership of land, the ownership of natural resources in society, all these were burning issues at that time. And still, I would say, till the present day, they are critical problems which need to be dealt with by any society and its leaders. So he tried to address these issues. And he tried to address them, let us remember always, without having any formal university education. He taught himself about these various fields: philosophy, economics, politics, chemistry, physics, and so on. And he respected modern science. Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr had a great deal of respect for modern science. And modern scientists as well. And he would meet not just with scholars like him, religious scholars, but also with other, with experts in other fields, such as banking, economics, philosophy, chemistry, logic, and so on. And I remember when he wrote his book, the non-usurious banking in Islam, Al-Bank al-Arabi fi al-Islam, which he wrote in the 1960s, when the idea of Islamic banking was just being born at that time. And he was asked by a leading institution to comment on the possibility of establishing an Islamic bank which did not employ usury and other practices or ideas which contravene Islam. So in order to write that book, and here you're not talking about a banker, you are talking about a religious scholar, he took it upon himself to meet with bankers, economists, experts in finance, in order to understand the nature of banking and the various activities employed or utilized by bankers, and in order to write his book, The Non-Usurious Bank in Islam. If we look at his book, Our Economics, he compared Marxism with capitalism with Islam. Basically, what he was saying to the world and to Muslims, he said, instead of saying communism is haram, communism is tantamount to infidelity, kufrun wa ilhad, like many of the other scholars did, for whom I have a great deal of respect. But his approach, the approach of Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr, was different. He was saying, look, instead of saying, he did not issue any fatwa against communism. Instead of doing that, he said, look, let us explain to people what Marxism is, what are the fundamentals and the notions and the instruments and the procedures and the practices of Marxism, and also let us explain to them the nature of capitalism, and let us explain to them the Islamic alternative and let them judge for themselves. So basically, he respected the intelligence of people. He tried another approach. He utilized a different method to say that Marxism is wrong and Islam is right, through explaining the nature of Marxism and capitalism and Islam. And this is what he did in his book, Our Economics, and to some extent also in his other book, Our Philosophy. Thank you. Then let me move to the third aspect of my talk, and that is the aftermath. By the aftermath, I mean the results, the consequences of the thinking and the publications and the activities of this great man. So I think it is fair to say that Muhammad Baqir Sadr left a great legacy of a new thinking. He left us with a great legacy of good thinking, new thinking, guidance, okay, for Islamic thinkers, for politicians, for writers in several areas. To give you just one example, he was a pioneer of Islamic banking. And although some people criticized Islamic banking or Islamic banks at the time, that perhaps they were not actually abiding by the principles of Islam 100%, his view was, it's all right, even if they abide by the principles of Islam 50% or 60% or 40%, that's okay, because it is better for people, it is better to deal with these institutions, okay, who are, let us say, partly Islamic. It is better to deal with these institutions than to deal with the conventional interest-based banks. So these institutions, they may be abiding by Islam to the extent of 40% or 50%, but hopefully in the future they will increase that percentage, that adherence to Islam in a gradual fashion. Muhammad Baqir Sadr, I think it is fair to say that he was new blood, a new thinker, a noble thinker, okay, and who believed in the gradual Islamatization of society. He believed that you cannot impose Islam in one go. You have to accept that Islam will permeate society in a gradual fashion. And that requires a great deal of effort. It requires perseverance from the leaders of Islamic movements. So we see, for example, that this sector, this new sector of Islamic banking and finance, has been growing at a high rate since the early 1970s. And I think it is fair to say that much of the credit for this achievement, the growth of Islamic banking and finance in the world, okay, can be traced back to the thinking and the efforts and the writings of Sayyid Muhammad Baqir Sadr. In the political field, I also think that Sayyid Muhammad Baqir Sadr guided a lot of the positive politicians, the positive Islamic politicians, you know, who believed in the teachings of the Prophet and the immediate members of his household. You always hear that prominent politicians, particularly Shia politicians, quoting Sayyid Muhammad Baqir Sadr and emphasizing that they benefited from his teachings and his ideas and they try to adhere to his thinking. Many books have been written in the areas of philosophy, economics, political organization, based to a large extent on the thinking and the ideas and the contributions which have been provided by Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. And I might conclude at the end to say that a great deal of similarity, affinity existed between Imam Khomeini and Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr in their approach to the Islamatization of society and the presentation of the Islamic alternative to compete with the other ideologies which existed at the time. Of course, each of these great personalities, Imam Khomeini on the one hand and Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr on the other hand, operated in a different environment. And therefore, each one of them acted and contributed in a way that is appropriate and suitable as they saw it within the nature of the environment in which they were living. At the end, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.